Manhattan Bank has been serving the Gallatin Valley since 1905. Started by local farmers in order to help grow the agriculture industry, Manhattan Bank has since grown into a full-service bank serving the entire valley. With branches in Manhattan, Churchill, Three Forks, and Bozeman, you're never far from your local bank.
As banks are consolidating and changing, Manhattan Bank sets themselves apart through consistency and a small-town banking feel. Come see why we have been in the valley for well over 100 years. Stop by the new building in Bozeman, see Justin Skillman and Tyler Dosher for your business banking, and Brad Whitmer for your home loans. Go Cats.
Member FDIC.
He's one of your horsed. He's one of your horses. Horsed? He's one of your horsed.
Well, there's the intro.
Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy.
All right. Welcome back, Bobcat fans, and thanks for joining us on another episode of the R&R CatCast. I'm one of your hosts, Ryan Foley. He's your host, Ryan Thornburg. We are the Ryans of the Big Sky Podcast Network, the Montana State affiliate of the Big Sky Podcast Network. And we have a dang sponsor in our new bank, Manhattan Bank, serving all your banking needs in the Gallatin County with four locations in Bozeman, Churchill, Manhattan, and Three Forks. We are a podcast for the fans, by the fans, and we better be your first listen for Bobcat banter. Thorny, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's Monday. You know, it's a good day. I'm feeling good. How you doing?
That win was huge. Huge for us.
It is. And I want to talk about that. Yeah, man. I'm very excited to talk about the impact of the win. Not just the game itself, but what it means to win this game. I think there's a lot to talk about in that side of things. So, yeah, excited to get into it.
Excellent. Yeah, we were licking our wounds last week, and now we can celebrate another victory over Cheney and in the Inferno. That's good. We'll talk about that and how that positions us for the Big Sky Conference the rest of the way. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We're going to recap the Eastern Washington game. We'll go into the UC Davis game. In between, we're going to talk a little bit about the polls, a little bit about the injuries, talk about what's in our Golden Coulee. And then we have quite a few Bobcat submitted Golden Coulee questions. And I crafted a couple of buyers sells for us if we get to it. Another jam-packed episode, man.
Yeah, I'm excited. It should be, yeah, there's a lot to cover. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Well, let's talk about what's in our Golden Coolies.
What's in your Golden Coolie?
Oh, man, it still, yeah, still makes me chuckle. I don't know if I'm ever going to get used to that. I'm drinking the Salmon Fly Honey Rye from the Madison River Brewing Company, which is where Belgrade, Montana. Yeah, I forgot I had it sitting in the fridge. I'm like, oh, yeah. Everything else in there I've already had, like, this season. I haven't bought new beer in a while, but I'm pretty sure I haven't had this one yet. It's good beer, man. It's a nice, sweet flavor profile to it without being, like, sickly sweet. I don't know. It's tasty. It's a good one. Late summer beer as summer's winding down, if summer's over. I don't know the last day of summer, but it's got to be getting close.
It's past.
Is it officially like
22nd
fall?
22nd or something like that. All right. Well done, Thorny. You are more dedicated to getting new beers lately than I am. I'm still on my Perry Street fix. I got the amber once again. I can't get rid of it. It's so good. So
nothing wrong with that.
I just keep filling the growler full of it. And my wife, I think that's what it comes down to. My wife and I just really enjoy it. So she's not quite the beer drinker I am, but she really does like to have some of that amber when I bring it home.
Yeah, my wife likes beer quite a bit, but she's just doesn't like the wide array of beer. You know, she's just more particular about what she has. I still say it's her number one drink of choice when it comes to the adult beverages.
She probably likes Rainier.
I mean, she's from Washington. I think you're required by law to enjoy Rainier, whether you actually like Rainier or not.
It's so good. All righty. Cool. Well, that's good. Hopefully we can send out some more golden coolies. I know I've been putting quite a few in the mail. There's quite a few of our listeners out there that have golden coolies at this point. It'd be cool to see if you would send us some pictures via our socials, either texting us or on Instagram, Twitter.
Hashtag golden coolies. That's what we did last year.
Yeah, especially on game days. And so yes. I would like to get that going. Another thing on game days that I've been trying to pump out on Instagram is fly your flag. If you have a Montana State flag that you fly, take a picture of it and send it to me. It's kind of a little movement I've been trying to craft organically. And it's got a little bit of traction. I basically take a picture. I have two Montana State flags and I just kind of throw them up, you know, on my house. Well, not throw them up, put them in the flagpole properly. And I just think it's kind of a cool thing. So flags and coolies.
Hey, I put I took a screenshot of your flag post on Instagram and put it on Twitter, said via Ryan Foley. I don't think I told you that because you don't really have Twitter anymore. So I don't know what you actually see on Twitter or not. So I did that and it got some likes. So I'm helping you by helping me and us all at the same time. Look at that teamwork.
Excellent, man. Excellent. Well, let's get into the FCS stats poll. Came out today, as it does every Monday. September 25th, North Dakota State sitting at number one. South Dakota State and Montana are tied for number two. I thought Montana was getting some first place votes. It doesn't say on this
I don't see a tie. I see South Dakota State ahead.
Well.
Previously, really? They were tied for second, but South Dakota State had more points.
Yeah, I guess they do. They have 1,272 points, and Montana has 1,264 points. So,
whoa, yeah, Sacramento, they have 1,142. There's too many ones in there. They should be in first place, according to this. I just saw that. Plus, it just says Sacramento, too, which is kind of funny. It doesn't say Sacramento State. Sacramento.
Oh, my gosh.
With 11,000.
Whoever typed that should come to my math class.
I don't think anything to do with math.
Montana State. Sitting at number four, right behind Montana. Sac State sitting at number five. They moved up two spots from number seven. Delaware's number six. Cole Sane is playing for Delaware. I always think about that now.
Certainly is. Anyways, he's our starting right guard.
Nope, I didn't mean Cole Sane. Snyder. Who am I thinking? Cole Snyder. Yeah. Wrong Cole. Sorry, Cole Sane. That's such a weird transition. You know, Montana to Delaware State, so...
Was from Canada,
or not Delaware so, State, just Delaware.
I mean, I couldn't tell you, man. It is a weird transition. But kudos to Missouri, him. He's starting.
Yeah. So. Missouri State, who lost to South Dakota State, they're pretty good. They're sitting at number seven. Weber State, number eight. Jackson State, number nine. And Holy Cross, number 10. So, only other Montana school, excuse me, the Big Sky school, would be Eastern Washington, who dropped down to number 20 after being number 15 last week. And I think UC Davis is getting some votes.
So they're one Idaho. And
three, we'll talk.
Idaho's getting some votes.
They are?
Yeah, the Tubbs guys are all blasting all over social media because they're pretty ecstatic that they're actually getting some votes. Yeah. Like the best
team down there.
Idaho ranking since they joined, basically. And they're actually receiving votes. They're in the top... 35 or whatever it equates to.
Are you buying or selling Idaho?
You know what? If you're going to ask me that right now, I'm probably buying them. Like, I got no reason to doubt them at the moment. They haven't really played a real good test yet because I never bought into NAU because I never do buy into NAU. All the dark horse talk, all the easy schedule talk, like NAU's NAU, man. Yeah, I don't know. I'd buy it for the moment. I'm buying what Jason Nick is selling currently. I wanted to mention before we move off from the poll, Incarnate Word dropped all the way down from tied for fourth with Montana State all the way down to 11th for losing to Southeastern Louisiana. Who's the 21st ranked team this week? They were not ranked last week, but that seems like a pretty harsh punishment. And that was like an overtime game. I believe it was super close. So I don't know why they got penalized so badly for that. I think one a situation where a team is like so high and people are just waiting for them to fall so they can like, yeah, I told you they're frauds. Could be that kind of situation. I don't know, but interesting to see them fall that far from one loss. Anything else you want to say about the stats poll here?
No, let's go on to the Big Sky Power Ranking.
Yes.
Big Sky Podcast Power Rankings.
The more important poll. And did you vote this week?
You know, like you said, I don't have Twitter anymore. And I don't get the link. Apparently, if you would send me the link, I would vote. But I crafted my top. I crafted my power list, but I did not vote.
I sent you the link. It's the same link. You just bookmark it. It never changes. But anyway.
Oh, there you go.
who do you got? Who would you have voted for?
Okay. I put the Grizz number one, Sac number two, MSU number three, Weber four, Idaho five, UC Davis six, Eastern seven, NAU eight, Northern Colorado nine, Portland State 10, Cal Poly 11, and Idaho State 12.
Dead last, man. Idaho State. What can Idaho State ever do to get off the mat? I don't know. I'm pretty sure I went chalk, or not chalk, but I went exactly the same as you. I don't know what I did once I got down to 8 to 12. I may have flip-flopped to Portland State, Northern Colorado at 9 and 10. I don't remember. It doesn't really matter. Yeah, I have Idaho's in the fifth right now, and then UC Davis 6, and Eastern's got to be 7 because I couldn't put them above NAU. So there you go. Yeah, I think the top 4. Possibly 5, if you include Idaho here, are starting to, you know, separate themselves.
As they should. The top of the Big Sky is so stinking good. Montana State, Weber State, Sac State. I mean, Sac's probably the most underrated team, maybe in the country. And they're underrated at 5. So, and who knows where Montana State is. Right? Like, that's kind of the wild left for me. Is like, what is Montana State? Well, we beat Eastern, and they were 15th in the nation, and that's a road win. But Eastern is not the Eastern of old. Like, we'll get into that here in a moment. I don't know. So, a lot to be determined, especially with the amount of injuries we have. Holy cow, Montana State is just decimated. So, yeah,
honestly, I don't know what about Montana State just yet. I don't know how good we truly are. And that's something we'll certainly start discussing weekly on this podcast, I'm sure. And we'll be discussing it here tonight. All right. Well, it went. The voting members voted Montana number one, Weber State number two, Sac State number three, Montana State number four, Idaho five, UC Davis six, Eastern seven, NAU eight, Portland State, UNC, Cal Poly, Idaho State. So I think the difference is I had us third, I believe, above Weber, and it looks like Weber State's number two in this poll. Montana, Weber, Sac, and MSU.
They put Weber second. That's I can't fathom putting Weber in front of Sac. Like, that just seems unreal to me.
Yeah, that was a surprise to me. Like, I'm okay with anybody being above MSU, but like, Sac State should clearly be number two in my opinion. You could flip-flop Weber and Montana State at 3 and 4. That's fine. But, Sac State just whooped an FBS team on the road, 41-10, and somehow Weber State's 5-point win over a struggling UC Davis team is better. I don't know. And whatever.
Yeah.
This is fan-based stuff, man. It's fun. I don't know how many people actually vote in this. Why don't you actually vote next time? And you can help influence it in the direction that you want it to go.
Well, maybe you could send me that link again, maybe in an email.
I'll put it in that important link.
Save it.
Important links document that we have in the Google Drive. How's that? We got some links in there. I'm going to put in there.
Nice. That would help.
All right. Well, we're already over what I was hoping to be on our intro segment here. Anything else you want to talk about? I don't want to shorten things. I don't want to cut you off.
Well, just a little bit about injuries as we normally try to touch up on those. Tommy Mellott, it's apparent that he has a concussion. I don't feel like anybody's actually come out and said that. I listened to Coach Vegan today. I don't remember him specifically saying that. However, he says Malat will be out this week. Fingers crossed for next week thereafter. Lane may play. He's a full go at practice right now, but he is not certain how much he will contribute, although he did say he probably will contribute against UC Davis. Jeffrey Manning is back. Confirmed that he had a head injury during the Oregon State game. So I was right on that. He will be back. And Titan Fleischman is also back. So we are gaining a running back. We don't know if he will be serviceable, but that loss to Tommy is big. So that's going to put Sean Chambers as QB number one and Sean Austin as QB number two. He's going to get a lot more reps in practice this week.
For sure.
By yourself, Thorny, we will see Sean Austin against UC Davis.
So,
I'm going to buy it.
I mean, Vegan came out and basically said they're not going to. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean that they're not going to. But I do take him at his word for that. I don't think Austin is ready. Unless Sean Chambers gets hurt, I think we're seeing a lot of Sean Chambers.
Oh, for sure. But I think we will see Sean Austin. That's my... That could be a bold prediction, but I'm going to buy that.
I would above that opportunity, I would say somebody plays Wildcat quarterback for a few snaps here and there. More likely than Sean Austin coming in. Derek Snell taking a snap at Wildcat quarterback could be something we might see. He did that in the spring game.
Handoff. You know how...
He's a good runner, man.
In the beginning of the... Yeah, he is a really good runner. Kind of shades of at the very beginning of the game into the Eastern game when Malat handed it off to Sean Chambers. And Sean, you know, scampered for like 10, 11. I was like, I like that.
Yeah.
That was good. Let's do that with Snell back there. Absolutely. Snell is so athletic with the ball. He looks so smooth.
He does.
For such a big guy.
No, he's a good running. He's a good with the ball in his hands, man. Like, he makes good cuts. He makes good decisions. He doesn't look awkward out there like a lot of tight ends who just kind of end up just crashing into defenders like a lot of tight ends do. Like, he's good, man. I love seeing him running the open field, and I'm so happy that he's getting more opportunities this year than he has previous years. The Alaskan assassin, which I like. I'm going to go with that.
You need to pump that out there. Alaskan assassin.
Alaskan assassin. Love Pretty it. Sure Mr. Snell listens to the podcast, so there you go. There's a shout out. Derek, we love him on this podcast. Anything else you want to say before we move into the actual recap here?
Let's do it, man.
All right. Well, let's do the stat read down. Man, I just make up words every time on this podcast.
The whoop down.
The whoop down. Wasn't a whoop down this time for anybody, but the Bobcats did dominate in a lot of key categories, but, ultimately, just couldn't really separate themselves on the scoreboard, and we're going to talk about that. But the final score, 38-35, your Montana State Bobcats come out with the victory, two in a row on the red turf over in Cheney, Washington, because we've had two road games there because the Big Sky schedule just hates us. 28 first downs for the Bobcats to just 15 for Eastern Washington. 6 for 16 on third down for the Cats, which is, you know, not great, but 3 for 12 for Eastern Washington. Very good third down defense by the Bobcats. 466 yards of total offense rolled up by the Bobcats. I didn't think that we could hold Eastern Washington to just 349 yards of offense, but especially when they got like seemingly well over 100 on their first two possessions. So anyway, 349 total yards of offense for the Eagles, just 201 through the air for Gunnar Talkington, who was 6 of 26, did throw three touchdowns, but he did have the interception.
16 of 26.
But yeah, did I say 6? 16 of 26. A little bit better than 6 for 26. 7.7 yards per pass. Cats were just 10 of 20 with a combination of Sean Chambers and Tommy Malat for 111 yards through the air at 5.6 yards per pass. 355 rushing yards from the Bobcats on 60 rushing attempts, 5.9 yards per carry. Eastern did have some success running the ball, 148 yards on 29 attempts for 5.1 yards per carry. That's not a bad day in the office there. Penalties, both teams weren't very good. Bobcats were actually pretty bad in this game. 7 penalties for 66 yards, something that absolutely needs to be cleaned up and was disappointing to watch. 5 penalties on Eastern Washington for 60 yards. The 2 turnovers there for the Eagles ultimately cost him pretty big. The interception right at the end of the game, and then the fumble, I think, on the previous possession for the Eagles. 2 huge turnovers forced by the Bobcat defense, who really made some plays there in the fourth quarter. Time possession, 38 minutes and 36 seconds for the Bobcats to just 21 minutes and 24 seconds for the Eastern, which is, let's be real, like that's not an unusual stat line for Eastern Washington. So don't read too much into that. Eastern always gets dominated on the time possession because that's just kind of the brand of football that they play.
Before Saturday, Eastern was 65-12 on the Inferno since 2010. So now they're 65-13. That's holding court. That's the definition of holding court. And that field, did you see all those players slipping on it?
I did. I noticed the same thing when I was watching highlights of their Tennessee State game. Like I saw guys just kind of not having good footing and some awkward cuts and guys slipping around, especially for Tennessee State. So something's up with that field. But that could, you know, play into the concussion. I'm sorry, we're not using the C word, to the upper body injury sustained by Tommy Mellott bouncing off that rock hard turf or whatever's going on with that turf. So yeah, something was up though.
Yeah. Well, let me run down some individual efforts. Chambers was 6 of 12 for 69 with 1 touchdown and 1 interception, but he was 28 for 160 with 2 touchdowns rushing. Ooh. If you were just to read those stats, you would be like, okay, 28 for 160 would be the passing, but no, that was the rushing. And 6 for 12 would have been the rushing, right? Non-Montana State offense. Nope, just the opposite. Elijah Elliott, the dog.
Yes.
Our 12th string running back, apparently is had 18 carries for 156 yards. If there was an applause button that you have on your little machine over there, hit that now. He averaged 8.7 with 1 touchdown. Nice job, Elijah Elliott. We knew you had it in you. We've been rooting for you this whole time. Whole Bobcat Nation has been rooting for you this entire time. Well done, buddy.
Yeah.
RJ Fitzgerald. You have one?
No, go ahead. Go. No, I don't anymore. I replaced it with the Golden Cooley sound. it took the place of the applause.
He had 2 carries for 13 yards, most notably a touchdown where he was fleet of foot, made a dashing cut. Well done, sir. Mellott had 8 carries. No, he was... I mixed up my stats here. He was 4 for 8 for 42 yards, so I think that's passing. You know, Mellott actually looked pretty much... He looked better as a passer in the short amount of time we got to see him. His passes were more crisp. They were coming out on time. He wasn't just staring them down. I was excited what I was seeing. Kind of sucks that he got dinged up there. So
I mean, he threw 8 passes that. And, you know, when did he get injured? It was pretty halfway through the first quarter, yeah. Right? So he threw 8 passes and Sean Chambers threw 12 passes in the next 3.5 quarters. So
yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, Mellott would have probably ended up with probably closer to 30 attempts at the pace he was going instead of just 12.
Other than that, Patterson, Willie P went 5 for 45 with 1 touchdown. Derek Snell had 1 catch for 24 yards, and it was an awesome catch. That was a great pass by Sean Chambers, by the way, too, on
perfectly
that one.
In stride.
Yep. And Stones Glessner was 1 for 2 with the 37-yard field goal from the left hash, which is a tough kick, but he misses a chip shot from the right hash, 19-yard miss. And that's about it. So those are the stats. Oh, let's talk about a little bit of Eastern Washington, the big-time players. Hockington was only 16 of 26 for 201. He had 3 touchdowns and 1 interception, but holding any Eastern quarterback to 201 yards, bravo, right?
That's right, yeah.
Micah Smith, the running back, the unknown running game, like you said, had 13 carries for 114 yards. He did have a long of 56 right off the bat. That was like one of the first series, maybe the first series of the game. And he also had a 28-yard scamper. So big plays continue to hinder Montana State. Talking about big plays, Freddie Roberson, 2 for 90 with a long of 80. So these big plays that stack up against for that total offense of 349. You take away just Roberson's 80-yard dash right there in the third quarter. I mean, Montana State's been doing good. And I'm also going to say, Efton Chisholm III, 6'4", 53, and one touchdown. But the thing I think Montana State did so good against Efton Chisholm was they limited him in the return game. Montana State's special teams, Sands, a shanked punt, and Sands, the missed field goal, was vastly improved from the Oregon State game, in my opinion.
Yeah, especially the coverage. I wanted to call that out. So we'll get into the analysis here. But yeah, the actual kickoff coverage, the punt coverage was miles ahead. And part of that is Bryce Layton actually getting some air under the kicks and letting his return team get down there. But overall, just much better performance. No kicks out of bounds that I remember from this one. But still some kicking woes. But coverage, much better.
We did kick it out of bounds one time.
Dang it. All right. So kicked it out of bounds. Are you talking the punter or the kickoff?
Kickoff.
So yeah, kicked it out of bounds one time. Layton shanked one off, like way off to the left. That was did not go very far. And then, of course, the chip shot, extra point missed by Blake Glessner. So some kicking issues continue for Montana State, which is going to bite us in a close game at some point.
Let's talk about that kick, that 19-yard field goal. So we just had a block punt, a game-changing, momentum-changing play from Ty Okada. Although it got such an eastern bounce, Ty had such a hand on it, I expected it to bounce back in the end zone. It still went about 30 yards down the field.
Yes, that was crazy.
And so we had a long run on first or second down. Chambers went on the outside. And then we get down into the red zone. We had about 2.5 yards to gain. And we gained about 2.5 yards on the first two or first three plays before that. And Coach Vegan said, looking back, I'd still go with the points. What's your thought on that?
Like we talked about on the instant reaction show, like I'm okay with either decision. And I'm still okay with it. I would have liked to have seen them gone for it. I don't think it was such an obvious choice that I would say that it was a bad choice to take the points, but I think going for it was the correct call there. But I can totally see the logic behind taking the points and kicking the field goal.
Yeah. Okay. I would have gone for it.
But, so I put it on Twitter. I want to interject here. Should the Cats have gone for it on fourth down? 95 votes, 81% said yes. Of course, hindsight's 2020, so people, are going to say that.
Yeah, exactly,
but,
right?
But very, very one lopsided in the yes category that should have gone for it on fourth down there. But, you know, Vegan did have a good point that they had just run three plays and gotten like 4 yards. It's like they weren't going anywhere. Eastern was stuffing everything. And, you know, that would have been a pretty big momentum killer if they had gone for it and Eastern stuffed them. You know, hindsight's 2020. I would have liked to have seen them going for it there. Just be aggressive. Just try and put the game out of reach. Like, that's what you do in these kinds of games. When you have an opportunity to step on the throat of your opponent, you take it.
Yeah. It's the thing that bugged me the most was that was a momentum-changing play, a game-changing play, and then it went in favor of Eastern Washington. It just felt so like our luck sometimes. I hate to put it that way, but that's a Montana State bounce right there.
Yep.
For lack of a better term.
Yep, a bad bounce on the block punt, and then we can't punch it in, and we end up missing the field goal. Like, Eastern got no punishment at all for having a blocked punt on their own, inside their own 20 or whatever it was. It was deep. Ugh, come on.
So, Thorny, I know where I want to go with this game for a little bit. I want to talk about how resilient the Cats are. Resilience is a word I put in all caps in my notes. To me, this is quintessential resilient Cats. Look who we're missing. Help me out here. We're down to our basically fifth string running back. We're down QB1. We're down
QB3.
Two safeties.
Don't forget QB3, Jordan Reed.
Yeah, QB3. Down two starting safeties. Mm-hmm. Who else am I missing?
Our 1B fullback, Jahari Martin.
Yeah, there it is. I might be missing some other people. So what I'm trying to say is we went to Eastern Washington, a place of notice, like we really struggle at Eastern Washington in our history. Everybody does. Like, look at that history from 2010, 65 and 12. Unreal. And we come off a just gut-wrenching loss, like a butt-kicked loss, but still gut-wrenching. I mean, we thought we'd do a lot better. We come out with a win against a top 25 team on the road against a rival. Resilient, man. It might not be the prettiest game we had, might not be the most flashy, and no doubt we have a ton to work on, but this is like a springboard for so many things for the Cats going forward. This is such a good win for us.
It's 100%. I don't care if Eastern Washington loses every game on the rest of their schedule. If last year was monkey tossing season, remember I kept saying tossing the monkeys off our back. I mean, those monkeys, they're still hanging around. They still want to get back up on you. So just to go into Cheney and win two in a row, and Tom Stuber put out a good stat, and maybe it was some research on some guys in Bobcat Nation. I can't remember. But now Montana State has won three times on the red turf, which is more than any other program. Like, it's huge. Like, I think the Grizz have won zero times. But point is, like, it's such a big win just because it's such a mental hurdle, and it's a program that we've struggled with for so long. I think we have the worst record against Eastern Washington out of any other Big Sky team since the year 2000. I'm just winging it there, but it has to be. it's a big win in terms of like the mental side of things. Now, it may not be a good win when you're looking back at the end of the season in terms of they were overranked and they didn't even end up winning more games than they lost, blah, blah, blah. But for right now, it's hard to put into words like how big of that win actually is when Eastern ends up being a mediocre team. It doesn't make any sense to someone who's not familiar with Montana State's struggles in this side of things. But yeah, huge win.
I think the pundits will say exactly what you just said right there. Like, they'll look back and say, well, Eastern wasn't that good. Doesn't matter, right?
Doesn't matter to me.
It matters. What matters is week four, Eastern was the 15th team in the nation. They thought they were. They were coming off a bye week, two extra weeks to prepare for us. This is a galvanizing win. This is, when I look at the Montana State team, this is my take. We are a young team scrapping together who lost a ton of talent, who is now learning how to win. Are we going to be polished? No. Are we going to improve every week? We better. Because that's what Coach Vegan wants us, and that's what we expect.
I mean, that was much better than it was against Oregon State, but we still have so much further to go.
Yes.
But you want to be playing your best football in November. That's what Brent Vegan says, and I believe our best football is still in front of us, for sure. Like, we haven't even come close to playing our best football.
Absolutely.
So, good times in Bobcat Nation right now. Like, the win wasn't pretty, but it was an important win, very important win for the program and for this year.
Absolutely is, man. I couldn't be happy. I love beating Eastern. I hate losing to those guys. Living over in Spokane, it's a thorn in my side. I got a little bit of gloating today when I went back to the classroom, stuck it in a couple of those seventh graders' faces. It felt good.
That's fun for you. Congratulations.
All right. So, Ryan, what I think we should do is I honestly think we should table Eastern Washington, and then start moving into UC Davis, because we still got a lot of Golden Cooley questions, and I think we gave a good recap in our instant reaction show, albeit short. I thought sufficient. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably for the best. I wanted to say a lot more about the actual game, but you're right. We're already 35 minutes into this. We haven't talked about UC Davis. We got at least 30 more minutes to go, probably. So, nothing else we can say on that. Just the momentous win, I think, is the focus of this episode. Gutsy win with Tommy going down. And Sean Chambers, man. Sean Chambers came in and took control of the team and said, all right, I'll help us win this game, guys. Don't worry. Don't worry. I got this. And that was so huge to have a guy like Sean Chambers there to be able to do that. Like, Jordan Reed, like, I don't know where he is. He's hurt, obviously, but if he was healthy, I don't think he, could have necessarily come in the magnitude of this game in this moment. and been able to lead the team on to a victory after Tommy Watt goes down. Like, how valuable is it to have Shawn Chambers, a guy who's played a ton of football and who can kind of run a similar offense as Tommy, where he can kind of make some throws, but mostly kill you with his legs. So just huge shout out to Shawn Chambers and Elijah Elliott coming out party. Just awesome. Just awesome, awesome win. Good time to be a Bobcat. Just feeling good about it. Feeling good about our next opponent at this point, UC Davis. Feeling good that we have a chance to move to 4-1.
Inching closer to that 7 wins. We need this one bad. It's in front of a big crowd. National TV. I said Friday night during our instant reaction show. I was wrong. It's Saturday night. 8 o'clock kickoff for Montana time. 7 o'clock West Coast time. It's going to be late, but Saturday should be pretty good weather in Bozeman. You'll probably want to bring a jacket. This might get down into the 50s. I imagine it's going to be a packed house, brother.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a packed full throat house. Man, that's a
chodism right there.
Chodism. People are going to be tailgating for hours and hours. So, yeah, it's going to be a rowdy crowd.
Man, I wish I would have looked up the last time UC Davis was in Bozeman. It feels like it's been a while.
Well, I actually had my notes. I was curious, when's the last time we even played UC Davis? Was it 2018?
It was Choate's last year. We beat them right before going into the CAC.
2019. Yeah, it was his. That's what it was. So we didn't play them.
Going right before the CAC race.
And when's the last time UC Davis came? It would be 2016. Last time UC Davis came to Bozeman.
Wow.
And then we did not play them at all in 2017. 2018, we also did not play them. So we skipped them for 2 years. That's interesting. Yeah. And we did 27-13 on the heels of 132 rushing yards from Chad Newell and 66 passing yards from Chris Murray. Yeah, that was Choate's first year. Remember, we won our last two conference games, UC Davis, and then we beat the Grizz after losing pretty much every game before that.
Yeah, there it is.
There it is. All right, tying it all together. Look at that. UC Davis, man. So I've been doing some research today on the Aggies. Led by good old Dan Hawkins. He's been there for a while now, but this is probably the second time that we've played Dan Hawkins, which is crazy. I don't think he would have been coaching in 2016. Maybe he was. But, you know, he's been there a little while now.
Yeah,
but
it's a tough one.
But, you know, they're a good team. They lost Hunter Rodriguez, who was their stud quarterback from last year, who apparently graduated and is playing some sort of European League American-style football. Is what I've discovered in the research for this. But let's kind of run down what the Aggies have done this season. They are sitting at 1-2. They lost to Cal, the Cal Bears, 13-34. They were down just 7-17 at half. Competitive game, 13-27 at the end of the third quarter. But the Hastings, their quarterback, Miles Hastings, threw the ball 50 times in that game, but just 242 yards. So that's going to be a theme that's going to come up. They throw the ball a ton, but they don't throw it very far down the field. They average like 5 yards a pass. Like, we average more per carry in the run game than they average per completion, which is just a bizarre stat. Well, Alonzo Gilliam did have 115 yards and a touchdown and 7 receptions for 35 yards. So they went toe-to-toe with Cal. A pick six on the second play of the second half is really what kind of let that get away from them. The game that I think kind of opened the eyes for some fans across the country is 22-24 loss at South Dakota State. South Dakota State had just come off their bizarre game with Iowa. I think it was like they lost, 5-7 or something? Or no, 5-8 or 5-9. There was no touchdowns in that game. I know that. Like, nobody scored a touchdown. There was like two safeties. A very bizarre game. South Dakota State looked really good defensively against Iowa. And, you know, UC Davis was down just 10-17 at halftime. Just couldn't get it done. They scored two touchdowns in the last 4 minutes on a last-second comeback attempt. Just couldn't get it done. They fall 22-24 at South Dakota State. And then last week, they lose 12-17 to Weber State in a, just an ugly slug, defensive slugfest that they were losing 6-14 at halftime, ended up losing 12-17. I think UC Davis moved the ball pretty well in that game. Forced three turnovers, or plus three turnovers, but they could not punch it in. They moved the ball between the 20s, but one of the classic bend but don't break type of performances by Weber State, and they just couldn't get it done. 57 passing attempts by Miles Hastings in this game. 57 attempts. That's crazy. But 4.5 yards per pass.
Coach Vegan said they used their running backs a lot in the pass game.
I mean, it looks like they used their passing game as kind of one of those extensions of a run game type situations, which is very different than what UC Davis has done over the years. But I think Miles Hastings, that's just kind of the quarterback that he is. Number 7, 6'1", 190-pound, sophomore. But they're currently 16 in the country in passing yards per game. So, you know, they're moving the ball. But, you know, they better be. If you're throwing it 50 times a game, you think you should be top 20 in passing yards.
Sounds like he's going to be getting the ball out really fast.
Yes.
Getting to the quarterback might be a problem for us. Hasn't been a strength for us yet. I wonder how we cover on the outside. I wonder what kind of offense, or excuse me, what kind of defense we plan on implementing. One of the things I think I thought about today in between classes was, is MSU stuck in our defense? Or are we flexible enough to adjust to different schemes?
I mean, historically, what MSU has done, at least under Vegan, you know, is very kind of a base. We do our thing. It's kind of a defense that shuts down everything type defense is the plan. So, no, I don't think we adapt a whole lot.
Yeah, because you have to be able to, as like a teacher, you have to be able to have different approaches with different kids in different classes. And, I mean, you could have your base stuff. Every teacher has their base stuff. And so, Willie Mack, Montana State has their base stuff, but we need to be multiple, not necessarily multiple fronts. Don't get me confused on that, but we need to be multiple in coverages. I don't know if Montana State has that. And I think that's where Montana State has gotten a little bit caught. I don't know if we have the guys to run the defense like we want to run the defense. And I think we're still trying to learn how to run our defense. Because now all of a sudden we don't have Troy Anderson. We don't have Amandre Williams, Chase Benson, Daniel Hardy. Because that looked a lot different for us last year. We're running the 4-2-5. What does that look like for this Montana State Bobcats? And will it look a lot different when we get Rylan Ort back and Jeffrey Manning back? I'm not sure. So it could look a lot different. I think that might have been a Golden Cooley question, actually.
It will look better. Even if it's the same exact defense.
It will look better.
Just an upgrade in the talent on the field. You looking around for a question?
Yeah. I thought I skipped a Golden Cooley question.
Nope. Well, I'm gonna talk about some other players to watch for UC Davis if you want to keep searching for your question there. Alonzo Gilliam, everyone kind of knows about him at this point. It seems like he's been there forever. He was the preseason biggest guy, offensive MVP, the running back, 5'9", 190-pound senior, Walter Payton Award watch list. He catches a lot out of the backfield, and that's something he does really well. He's probably the most complete back and the biggest guy in terms of what he can do in the passing game and the receiving game, that is. And obviously running the ball, he's going to be a handful. He's very elusive. He runs he's powerful, but he's fast. He's going to be a handful, man. I'm a little concerned about giving big plays up to a guy like Gilliam, who is a big play extraordinaire.
So in my notes, I wrote down, what's the bigger key to this game, shutting down Gilliam or shutting down Hastings?
I would say shutting down Gilliam in this game. Passing game has been kind of Achilles' heel so far, but I don't know. We're not going to get to Hastings. That's just not the style of offense that they run. So they're not going to be bombing over the top of us either. So in that regard, it's almost better suited for us in some ways, because they're not going to be, hopefully, not just hitting wide open receivers streaking up the sidelines. That just doesn't seem to be like what they kind of do in the passing game. So if we can shut down Gilliam in the running game and just force those little 3 yard, 4 yard out patterns, like I'd rather deal with that, I guess.
I was thinking just the opposite. I'd rather shut down Hastings. I just don't think Alonzo Gilliam will be able to score enough to keep up with us. He might have 2-3 touchdowns, but I think Montana State will have more collectively.
So you're thinking this is going to be kind of a high scoring game?
Yeah, I do.
Is that just what you think the MO for the Bobcats is this year? Is we're going to have a better offense than last year, but just give it more points than last year?
So maybe, I don't know. I was going into the last game thinking of that. Montana State showed me a little bit through the bit of the third quarter, though. That middle part of the game, Montana put the clamps down on Eastern Washington. We made some adjustments that I still can't really gather my head around. We showed a little bit of confidence in our defense, something I hadn't seen against a quality opponent like Eastern. So I don't know. Could be a little bit of both.
I don't know. It's going to be, like you said, a little chilly. It's going to be a night game. You know, not the best conditions for passing the ball, I suppose. Night game in late September in Montana. I'd rather stop the running back. But who knows? Yeah, I don't really know what to expect from UC Davis in this game. They do have some big, another big weapon. McCallum Castle's 6'5", 233-pound tight end. He popped out on film when I was watching a little bit about them. Second team All-American preseason by Sam Herder, Hero Sports. They use him a lot in the screen game. He's a big screen target. And then, of course, they have two offensive linemen that are like preseason All-Conference first-teamers. Their center and their right guard. I don't have it written down, but it was one of the guards, I'm pretty sure. They got a lot of talent, man. Like, they're not as dynamic in the passing game as they have been under Dan Hawkins, but they're going to get the ball out quick, and they got guys who can make plays in space. That's what they want to do. They want to get their playmakers the ball in space and let them do their thing. And that's what we're going to have to be really sure tackling in this game. I'm hoping that we can get our hands up on the defensive line and bat some balls down, because they're just going to be throwing those short slants and short intermediate passes. Have to bat some balls down. I have to be disciplined in this one.
On defense, they're going to throw multiple fronts against us, something that we really haven't seen, so we need to prepare for that. They're fast. They're quick on defense. That's one thing I noticed when watching them.
Did you notice number 4, Rex Connors? I was watching the highlights against South Dakota State. I guess he was hurt for Weber State, according to some UC Davis fan that visited Bobcat Nation today. That dude looks like a stud, man. He's like 6'1", 203. He hits hard. He's very much a run-stopping safety. He's got that long, flowing white guy hair that's so popular right now. Man, he's a hard hitter. I'm a little worried about him. He's going to be popping some guys. So he's a guy to keep an eye on. Number 4 on the back end for UC Davis. Just popped. He just jumped off the film when I was watching that South Dakota State game.
Got some buy or sells to finish up the UC Davis talk. Buy or sell, Alonzo Gilliam is north of 100 yards.
Buy
or sell, Miles Hastings passes for 250.
Sell.
What do you think he passes for?
213.
213?
Very specific.
Buy or sell, we sack him 3 times.
Sell. I don't know if we'll even sack him once, to be honest with you.
Do you think we're going to win?
Yes, I do.
This would be such a fun game to go to. A night game, a non-traditional night game. It's going to be packed. It's going to be so much fun.
It's going to be packed, man. My concern on this game is Sean Chambers being the quarterback from stem to stern. Like, obviously, he's going to have all week to practice, and they're going to have all week to figure out how that's going to look. But basically, yet another ball carrier is gone for Montana State. So it's basically Chambers and Elliott are the guys that can run the ball at the moment. At least Elliott's here, because he wasn't the last 2 weeks for whatever reason. If by design, who knows? That's water under the bridge. That's in the past. So what do we do? More screens? Yeah. Try to attack the edges more? Use the wide receivers like we have been? At least in the first 3 games or first 2 games, do we use them a little bit more? I don't know. But, you know, it's a little more concerning how we're going to score that many points with Chambers going the whole way.
Now we'll see if we can run against them like we ran against Eastern Washington, because if that's open, game over. Yeah, I don't think we will.
Eastern's run defense was bad.
So this could be
their defensive ends and their linebackers just bit on everything. I rewatched that. Like they got caught all the time. And then when they did get a beat on him, Sean Chambers just stiff-armed to the ground.
That's really fun to watch. Hopefully this is a good Sean Chambers game and not the bad Sean Chambers three picks in the spring game kind of game.
I was trying to think. I think we need Chambers to throw for 150 is kind of where I landed.
That's exactly the same number that was in my head.
Yeah.
And we need for him to run about close to 100.
I could see that. Yeah. If we get 100 yards on the ground, 150 through the air, and most importantly, perhaps, no turnovers from Sean Chambers, I really like our chances to win this game. But it's going to be a challenge. And UC Davis is 1-3, but they lost to South Dakota State and Weber State by a combined 7 points. And they hung with Cal. Like, that game was not an embarrassment. Yeah. They made Cal have their starters in pretty much the entire game. So UC Davis, again, we're playing another team that like has to win this game to keep their playoff hopes alive. We just did that against Eastern Washington. We got one again at home here with the Aggies. Like, Aggies need this game. They're going to be desperate. They're going to pull out all the stops to win this game.
Yeah, they have a 1-3 record right now. They are like not. Their record doesn't reflect how good they are. They've had a really tough schedule.
No, they've had a brutal schedule to start their year. But you know, if they're going to be a top Big Sky team, they got to win those.
For sure. Bleeding Blue says, what worries you more, UC Davis? It's almost time to finish this when I can't say Alonzo Gilliam. Alonzo Gilliam or their passing game?
Well, I'm pretty sure we kind of covered this. I mean, Gilliam worries me more with his big threat ability. And, I mean, he's part of the passing game. So it's both, man. Gilliam just worries me. He's a good player.
Bleeding Blue, I would say the passing game for me. Yeah, I would go with the passing game, especially if they're passing it over 60 times. Like, Miles Hastings had 57 tries last week. That's crazy, man.
I don't know.
Absolutely
not. I wonder how much they're going to throw against us. Very curious.
All right, let's get into some other Golden Cooley questions. Let's see here.
Bobcat 1963 says, buy or sell, a Power 5 school will poach at least one of our young and upcoming offensive linemen after this season. I'm probably going to have to buy that, damn it.
Yeah, I would say I'd buy that as well.
I don't
want
to buy it. I have a name in my mind. I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to jinx it by speaking any names into existence.
JT Reed?
No. Nope, I'm not going to say it.
Does he play left tackle?
He might. It's a good possibility he plays left tackle.
Okay.
Do the math, people. What else we got? Gold Blitz. So we have been really bad at answering Golden Cooley questions this year. I want to apologize, everyone. We're just not in mid-season form. We weren't ignoring anybody. We just straight would start recording and just basically forget to look at the Golden Cooley questions because we're terrible at this podcasting game. Like, we joke, you think we would have gotten better into our fourth year going on this, but no, we really haven't gotten better at anything on this podcast. We just sound more professional with our audio quality. But he said, don't try and weasel your way out of answering the question everyone wants an answer to, because he asked this. You dodged it for a week. But I'm bringing it back. Who wins in a fight between one Titan Fleischman-sized Taco Dowler or 10 Taco Dowler-sized Titan Fleischmans? I gotta visualize this, and just give me a second to kind of process this. So a huge Taco Dowler
versus what?
10 Taco Dowler-sized Titan Fleischmans. I mean, it's got to be 10, right? It's got to be 10 of anybody can take out one guy.
Yeah, that's like the pack mentality. That's how African hyenas take down.
Exactly.
Lions.
Yeah. I mean, Taco Dollar is slight of frame, but he's not that small.
But I guess it's not like a fight to the death. It's just a fight.
Let's I don't go. Know. That's a funny question. He also asks, he's wondering how you guys feel about Kenneth Eiden. Buy or sell, Kenneth Eiden has a better stat line than Brody Grebe had last year at the end of the season. So he's thinking Eiden kind of takes Grebe's role in terms of like coming off the bench, making some moves while on the second unit. What did Grebe end up with last year? It was like 6.5 sacks. Like it was pretty good. It was decent.
Yeah.
I don't know what Iden's at right now. I'll probably sell it. I just haven't seen it enough in terms of the coaching staff subbing in as deep against that defensive line as I would like them to. I don't think I even barely saw Iden against Eastern. Did you?
My eyes weren't looking there. My eyes have been following Brody Grebe, mainly because I've been a little bit kind of on Brody lately. We mentioned in another pod that we think he might be a little too heavy.
Big for his britches.
His not the cockiness weight. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. He just doesn't look explosive out there. Maybe he's dealing with some lingering injury or something too. Like, you never know.
He doesn't look like he has the bend he needs in order to get underneath those tackles.
I think that's a good way of putting it. He looks stiff. Looks more stiff than he did last year. Yeah. Not as fluid of an athlete. I don't know. That's two uneducated fans' opinion of one guy who's still a very productive, so good player for the Bobcats.
Yeah, that's so true.
You want to read his last question there?
Oh, he had another one?
He's got, I guess, two more sandwiched into his last sentence.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Oh, I got it. Does our defense have a scheme problem? Will it get any better just by getting Rylan Orr back? That's the one I was looking for. Come on. Who's the best linebacker not named Callahan O'Reilly? Does our defense have a scheme problem? I wrote a note down in my notes this week that says, because last week I said, I don't know if our defensive players know our roles. And then my question to myself this week was, maybe our roles are just bad roles. So maybe we do have a scheme problem given our personnel. Will it get better by getting Rylan Orr back? Yes, it will. Who's the best linebacker not named Callahan O'Reilly? Nolan Askelson.
I would say Nolan Askelson is a better linebacker at the moment. I think Danny, you probably has a higher ceiling, but I'm happy they're both getting playing time because Danny Yu's just going to get better.
Danny
Yu's
leading the team with tackles right now.
Yeah, he is. He's like, I don't know. He kind of reminds me a little bit of like Troy, where he can get himself out of place, but he's got decent enough athleticism to kind of make up for mistakes he's making out there. He's going to get there. I really like what I see from him. I think he's got a high ceiling, but yeah, right now, like you told me I had to choose two linebackers, I'd probably choose O'Reilly and Nolan Askelson.
Sames.
And yes, we will get all better at Rylan Ort, and you already answered the scheme problem. I won't really talk about it. I agree with what you said.
Okay.
Let's move it on.
Thorny, why don't you read the Twitter?
Got some Twitter ones.
Golden Coolies.
You got a private message from, I should probably ask people who private message me if they want me to say their name or not. I assume it's probably fine. We got one from, I'll just say his Twitter handle, SeanHend76. He asks us, should Eastern have gotten two targeting calls? See, we didn't even talk about this. I wanted to talk about this. I think we alluded to it in the instant reaction show that we would talk about more on Monday. Do you think Eastern should have gotten any targeting calls? Obviously, the hit on Tommy that dropped him down to the ground, but then there's also the one on Sean Chambers, which I thought was very obviously targeting, and they reviewed and they waved off and said was not targeting. What's your opinion on that, Foley? Should have any flags have been called on Eastern Washington for the hits on the Montana State quarterbacks?
I don't think there should have been a flag on Tommy's hit. I think he was avoiding the safety, and then two guys came into him and they cracked heads, but they did not crack Tommy. Number 25 hit Tommy, and that's what popped him down. Maybe there should have been a personal foul because Tommy had clearly initiated his slide at that point. It wasn't targeting. The one on Sean Chambers clearly was. Number 4, I wrote down his, I think his name is Anthony Smith. He launched at him. Clearly launched at him. I don't know how that was not called for targeting. Head down, eyes down, crown of the helmet, came right into him.
Yeah, he launched. No, almost left his feet.
The easiest call. Yeah, so I was surprised. So, yes, that one should have been called. Absolutely.
See, I think the hit on Tommy sliding, I watched it in slow motion on replay. It was bang bang, so I'm okay with them not calling it. But I do think, I think it's number 25. I think Tommy slid before he launched at Tommy, and he launched low. So he launched knowing Tommy was going low. So I don't know. I don't. It wasn't dirty, but I think they probably should have thrown a flag. I mean, if that happens to an NFL quarterback, there's flags everywhere. I mean, that's just without a doubt. If Tom Brady does that, that guy's getting like sent to jail. So I don't know. I feel like they should have thrown a flag, but absolutely should have been targeting against Sean Chambers. He was being like held up and the guy just launched at him with his crown. Like I don't understand why it wasn't. Does Eastern Washington get a phone call or a talking to from the Big Sky Conference higher ups for not having proper equipment, a cart, trailer, stretcher to help injured players off the field? They waited until Tommy came to and had him walk off. I thought I heard someone say that that was what they wanted. I thought I heard in the post game that that was like the MSU staff's what they requested. I don't know that for a fact. I can't speak to this. I don't know the answer to this.
I wasn't aware of that one. Does Eastern get a phone call? I'm not sure. That's a tough one, Sean.
I mean, if that's true, they didn't have the proper equipment for an injured player, then yes, they should get a call. But I don't know if that was the case. I don't want to speculate on that. So,
okay.
Thanks for the question. Don't have a good answer. Apologize for that. Last one, we got Miles Miller, our guy who he asked us a lot of questions last year. He brings the funny signs to the game. He's the sign guy. I guess we got one more after this. Sorry, but anyway, Miles says, do you think the chance of rain in Bozeman on Saturday means Sean Chambers breaks the record for numbers of carries in a single game? I had to look this up because I'm like, I'm curious. What is the record? It's 58 carries by Paul Schaefer in 1968 against the Grizz. So, no.
How do you even find that? Where'd you find that at?
MSU.com in the football has a record book every year.
Huh.
It's updated for 2022. Shout out Bill Lamberty.
I'm not willing to sell that right away. Miles might be onto something.
59 carries in a game?
The way Montana State runs their offense, yeah, could be. Although, here's what I'm going to sell it. Elijah Elliott had 150-some yards last game. He's going to get more carries. So, yes, that I will sell just based off the fact that Elijah Elliott is still a dude.
Let me put this into perspective for you. Against Eastern Washington, the Bobcats ran the ball 60 times. So this would be Sean Chambers carrying the ball 59 of those 69 times.
Yes. Assuming we have like 80-ish plays, I could see it happening, man.
No.
I could.
Bobcat Nation wanted to like riot after Tommy Milani, like 34 carries against South Dakota State, which is a top 10 performance according to the record book, by the way. Yeah, 50. If he's not getting 59 carries, I will bet them. Mortgage on my house. It's a funny question, and I assume it meant to be humorous, but no. I didn't realize the record was that ridiculous either, though. That's ridiculous. Like that's not a modern-day stat. That is an old-school, before-they-believed-in-concussions stat.
Paul Schaefer in the CBS band.
Paul Schaefer, like at halftime in that game, just like chugged two beers and came back in and ran the ball 36 more times. That's how things went in 1968, okay?
Dude, he has some like Schlitz in the back.
He has a Schlitz, smokes a couple cigarettes, and gets back on the field.
All right, boys, let's get back out there.
So this is a really good question. All We've gone over an hour now, so darn it. But we're almost done.
Good job, Miles.
Brendan Henshaw asked a really good question that probably deserves more than 30 seconds of discussion. What position group has surprised or disappointed you the most so far?
Surprised is our offensive line. We're way better than I thought we would be. Yeah, kudos to those guys. Yes, you're right. Thorny, there's probably a whole nother episode that we haven't talked about. We haven't even talked about the interception that was at the end of the game. We didn't even give her take on that.
We're but too rushed, back man.
Brendan. Yeah.
Trying to fit all this in an hour is impossible.
It is. Brendan Henshaw, what's your question right there? What position group has surprised? Offensive line, disappointed, secondary.
I mean, those were the two low-hanging fruits, so I tried to come up with something different because I figured you would answer that way. I thought, though, I've been pretty impressed with the wide receiver group. I was pretty worried about them a little bit. I mean, a lot of unproven talent. Why what?
Why would you be, like, worried about the wide receiver group?
Well, Willie Patterson on the outside. I had no idea how that was going to look. Ravi Austin was unproven, and then the third guy ended up being Cleavan Thomas that we knew nothing about, man. Like, it was, we lost a guy to the NFL last year.
He played in the SEC, man. He was a starter in the SEC.
That doesn't mean anything.
It does mean something.
There's been lots of guys who started in the Power Five that come to the Big Sky Conference and then do nothing.
Terrible. So, a terrible take.
You're not impressed with the more than your expectations for the wide receiver group? They're exactly where you thought they would be?
I thought they were going to be good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't say they're going to be bad.
I thought that was going to be one of our
I'm surprised
points.
By them. Yeah, I didn't say they're going to be bad. Being surprised, pleasantly surprised, doesn't mean I'm going from like they were going to suck, like, oh, they're good now. I just thought they'd be pretty good, and I've been impressed with them.
If there's any
I'm trying to take one because you took
group,
the obvious one, man.
It's Marquis Johnson. He is so fast. I love watching him in the return game. I want to see him catch some more, like, screens or something.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
I think a big game for Marquis Johnson's in the works here for UC Davis. I think he's the exact kind of guy who can help us attack them and take some carries away from our two healthy ball carriers. Disappointment, secondary, I believe I would echo that as well. That's really the only one I can think of, to be honest. Everyone else at least done what I thought they would be or better. The linebackers, I didn't know what to think of them without Troy Anderson. They're doing okay. So secondary, which I thought was going to be a strength, is getting gashed. So secondary.
Our linebackers need more speed. We're kind of slow.
They need more speed, but they also need to understand where they are on the field. Like, they're not dropping deep enough on a lot of their stuff, and that's not helping the situation. So I think a lot of it's more assignments than anything.
So when you run the 4-2-5, your two guys that are twos, they need to be faster. And that's something Montana State hasn't planned for because Coach Vegan was new last year. That's something we'll have to address going forward for sure.
Could be. I mean, I could see a 4-3 being all right for Montana State.
Yeah. Yep. That'd be pretty cool.
So we'll see. Maybe we switch things up if it continues. We got better. And Eastern Washington, that's all they do, man. That's all they do is throw the ball. So it was a better performance. So we'll see. Good questions there. And my last question for you, Foley, buy or sell. This is a connection. Brent Vegan, Josh Allen. I was watching that game with Sean Chambers. It made me think, if Josh Allen was a Bobcat for an entire season, starting quarterback for the Bobcats, buy or sell, he would have more rushing attempts than passing attempts. Throughout the course of a whole season.
I'm going to sell that.
Sell that?
I think if you have Josh Allen, you pass the ball. I don't think Coach Vegan's offense would look like what we have right now if we had a prolific passer.
Josh Allen wasn't a prolific passer at Wyoming. He did not light up the yardage. So I'm just thinking, like, you know, Chambers ran the ball 28 times and threw it 18 times. Like, how many times since Tommy Mellott became quarterback has Tommy Mellott thrown the ball more than he's rushed the ball?
Gosh, it's so weird, Montana State's quarterbacks. You think once we would have moved on from Jeff Choate, we would have solved this thing, but we're in the same stinking boat.
Same.
We were.
It's the same. It's exactly the same.
Might as well be running Troy Anderson, the wing T back there, all over again.
Yeah, this is a joke, but like Tommy Mellott is like, this is just like Chris Murray 2.0 over here, right? That's not entirely accurate,
man.
But it feels kind of like it, like a guy who can make some throws and just dynamic running the ball. Although Tommy Mellott really hasn't been very dynamic running the ball this year yet. Does he have a run for more than like 20 yards on the year? I'm not sure he does.
He might have one.
But he has not.
If you ever get Ryan and I in a bar together, buying us a beer, and you want to just chew an hour off, talk about quarterback play with us, please. Because we have.
It's just, why can't it be normal?
Off.
Why can't it be normal?
I
just want pretty much
a slant over the middle.
Every other FCS team somehow can manage.
We don't run a screen pass. We don't run. There's a lot of routes we don't run. Just general crossing routes.
General things passes between the hashes areas. All right. Hey, we're using the tight ends more this year. So there.
We are.
We're taking a step in the right direction. That right. Well, there's an hour and 14 minutes. We didn't do it.
Oh.
We never do it. And there's so many things we didn't talk about. That's the worst part. It's like, I see why it would be. It's like Coulter Nuanez has his radio show and he can kind of map out his week. This, all right, on Monday, I'm going to talk about this and that and that. Like, sometimes I feel like we need to split this into more episodes because we just try and cram way too much into these.
It's too much life going on outside of Monday nights, man.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Well, let's just call this, man. Let's get out of here. I want to thank everyone for listening, as I always do, as we always do. We really appreciate it. Like, this is just, it means so much to us that people tune into this just rambling, incoherent garbage that we can't even think of proper words half the time. At least I can't. Appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate Manhattan Bank for being our sponsor for this upcoming season, this current season here. I want to direct everyone to our website, rrcatcast.com. You can check it out there. Find us on Twitter, rrcatcast there. Instagram, Facebook, everywhere. /rrcatcast.
Kofi.
Yeah.
Our supporters at Kofi.
Thank you. I haven't asked.
Thank you, guys.
I haven't mentioned that for a while. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for people that are sponsoring us and supporting the show on Ko-fi. That really means a lot to us. And if you want to join that army, you can Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/rrcatcast. What you got?
One more thing. I'm going to pick a Golden Ghoulie winner.
Nice. You do it. I don't care. I don't even remember. I'm tired.
I'm going to go with Miles Miller. Do you think Sean Chambers has a chance to go for 58? And here's why. I like Sean's, Hendrickson's. He was my second. Miles, hey, man, I'm going to send you a Golden Ghoulie. Send us some information. But I wanted to see it incorporated in one of your pictures or at the game somehow on a sign. Can you incorporate it? That'd be the dopest thing ever.
That'd be dank.
So I want to see that. Dink. All right, man. Fly your flags. Let's do it.
All right. Go Cats. Cats.
Fly your flags. Go
no,
Cats.
I said go Cats. I'm trying to end this damn thing. Go Cats.
Okay. Go Cats.